The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
When it comes to your investments and retirement, in this economy, it's important to be smart. And with the Smart Investor Hour heard right here on AM 1420 The Answer, you'll get both smart and intelligent information you'll need to help with your investing. So sit back, listen, and learn with your host of the Smart Investor Hour, Tim Hayes of RBC Wealth Management.
Good afternoon, everybody. Kind of a somewhat rainy day, and then it turned kind of nice, so keep your fingers crossed. Let's start thinking positively. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I'll permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it's gone past, I will turn the inner eye to its path where the fear has gone, and there will be nothing. Only I will remain. I think it was Frank Herbert in Dune. Can't remember, though. Attitude is a choice. Happiness is a choice. Optimism is a choice. Kindness is a choice. Giving is a choice. Respect is a choice. Whatever choice you make, make it wisely. I can't remember who read that or did that. I think it was Roy Bennett. Don't be pushed around by the fears in your mind. Be led by the dreams in your heart. Okay, there we go. Anyway, as we always say on the show, if you'd like any of the information we talk about, just go to WHK's webpage. You go to local podcast down to Smart Investor Show. That can take you, with one hop, skip, and a jump straight to my webpage. And there's all sorts of contact me and email me while you're there. I highly recommend that, we have some banners up there. And Insight is brand new research, okay? And by the way, we had our biggest day of people searching my webpage. It was last weekend. And so thank you very much for visiting. But it has a lot of good information, and it just doesn't talk about the market. It talks about all sorts of financial stuff. And by the way, they name names. Name names, okay? Which is interesting. And I would highly recommend under bulletin board, it has Rob Schleimer's stuff. And Rob's our head technician and a very good one at that, by the way. And he has a thing called Roadmap, and I highly recommend that. By the way, you just paid your taxes. You own a small business. My friend Dane Topich over at Dunbar and Bender can probably help you put away some more money with your plan and with your personnel's plan. So if you'd like more information on that, I think we should have Dane back pretty soon. I haven't talked to him in a while. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Lori Calvasina's thing. And I had all these questions about income stocks and income. And I'm going to go into that a little bit. But I had Ruth called me, and she is a very large IRA. She said, look, I'm not going to use it. What should I do with it? And I think the important thing is, during the Trump administration, they got rid of a lot of tax breaks. You can't take people out to lunch and write it off anymore. It just doesn't happen. It's business expense. And you also cannot stretch your IRA anymore. The people who inherit your IRA get whacked, because they make them take out a lot in the first couple of years. So what you want, if you want to convert into a Roth, that's fine. And by the way, you should check with your accountant, because I'm not an accountant. But I would do it gradually, okay? So, Ruth, that's how I'd answer that question. I would do it gradually. The year you retire, take some out. Next year, take some out. Next year, take some out. And slowly but surely, pay the taxes when your tax rate's lower, okay? So keep it in mind. So Lori Calvasina this week was talking about sentiment, and it took a hit this week, a big hit, I think, but she thinks it's not as big as it should be. So what was interesting was we were up for the week. We were up about 0.5%. While everybody was moaning and groaning, we were up 0.5%. Isn't that interesting? So the AAII Bulls versus Bears went negative, which is usually a good sign. It's still up there a little bit as far as we're concerned. The Bulls are still at like 40% or 39%. But, you know, we are seeing some things that we like. So what kept us on guard for some disruption in the equity markets was this AAII poll. And it's American Association of Individual Investors, for those who've listened to the show for the first time. But what it did, Fed fears and rising 10-year rates took a toll on the S&P 500. It got beat up last fall under the same circumstances. So U.S. equity futures had been positioned on the buy side per the latest data from the futures people, and also suggests that the frothy sentiment that's been in place for the broader U.S. Equity market, mega cap growth trade to be exact, in particular is far from fixed. You know, a couple of the big names got whacked on Thursday or Friday, I guess. It was Thursday. And we had the VIX, the equity put to call ratio, was up over one for a short period of time. So that makes things a little bit more interesting, because when it's over one, that means people are buying a put for every call. Normally people are bullish, so there's a lot more calls bought than puts. When they're equal or above equal, that's when, you know, the sentiment is shifting fairly quickly. Okay, so there's some widely watched indicators of stress in the equity markets. The VIX, and the VIX is bouncing all around. You know, a lot of people have talked about it, but it's still at 15, so it's not you know, not terribly high, or not, you know, anything we have to worry about yet. But, you know, Lori's approach is fundamental, and it's not really sentiment-driven moves in the equity market that take hold. But, you know, we think that's, you know, you leave that to the technicians, right? But if you look, there was a couple of, you know, like RBC's Dominion Securities technician thinks it was the technical threshold that was broken last week in the S&P 500. And he thinks, you know, 4391 is the next level, though. Rob Schleimer is a little bit more bullish than that, so we'll keep that. But, you know, look, when you have wars, which we kind of have at this point in Israel and Ukraine, that kind of we do. Normally, in wars, there's a pre-recession drop, you know, like 5 to 10%. So the key is it's been going on for a while. Yet we rallied. And what's really interesting, and, you know, like I've always said on this show, the best thing that can happen to whatever you own is for it to go up, okay? And things are going up, and we hit a new high just a month ago, and there's no money in the market. There's $6 trillion in the money market, and another seven-some-odd trillion moved to short-term bonds. There's no money in the market. We're hitting a new high. Why? Interesting. But during war periods, you know, you usually have kind of, it's similar to like a recession type move down, 5, 10, maybe 15%, you know, sometimes 20. So there we go. But we did have kind of an interesting start to the earnings season, where some people blew the numbers out, Microsoft and Google, others got whacked. Meta was a perfect example. United Rentals, which has been a big one. So I think that's interesting also. And look, for the most part, descriptions of the U.S. economy and the consumer continue to be favorable and emphasize its strength and resiliency. But I'll tell you this, everybody was talking about a recession last year at this time. Now they're saying there is no recession. So who's right? You know, the general consensus, they've been wrong all along. The Fed's been wrong all along, okay? I don't think the Fed's taken into account government spending, in my humble opinion. But so some companies are planning for a wide range of economic interest rate scenarios, which they have to almost. And some companies are still talking about back-end loaded forecasts, all right? So I listened to several big companies emphasize how they or their customers are managing through challenging headwinds. that doesn't sound like a big time expansion to me. So I mean, that's just me. And the big banks mostly emphasize the restarting of the IPO and M&A markets and full pipelines and that type of thing. And we can't help but wonder if those confidence levels will stay that high if the geopolitical situation continues to deteriorate and the Fed keeps interest rates higher. Okay. So, you know, it's stuff to think about. Now, the growth trade has come under pressure. And like I said last week, you know, when interest rates go up, long-term assets get whacked. And that's what growth is. It's all about long-term. So now, my humble opinion, we talked about how a couple weeks ago that the value story is catching up to the growth story on the earnings levels. All right. So it's not that growth has quit growing. It's just growing at a lesser pace. Okay. So value is catching up to it. So the earnings sentiment no longer looks better in the growth area than it does in the value area. All right. So that's kind of interesting. And if you look at the Russell 1000, the rate of upward earnings per share estimate revisions on the sell side is a little for value than growth right now. Interesting, right? Now, our GDP forecasts have been moving up a notch, yet it came down pretty hard on Friday or Thursday. I mean, we were looking for 2.2, we came in at 1.6, and the inflation numbers were a little higher. So what's interesting is deterioration in fund flows. I mean, $8 billion have come out of the ESG funds. $8 billion. That ain't chump change, folks. That's a lot of money, all right? So, here we have people taking money out of the market, and the market was hitting new high. The most bullish thing anything you own can do is go up. And you can think of all the reasons why it shouldn't, but if they're going up, pay attention, okay? Now, one of the things that we talked about, and Bob Schleimer's talking about right now, is he's looking at energy and saying, hey, you know, maybe it's time for energy to, move. Now, it did break out and did pull back, a little bit, but oil has been rallying lately, and it's been fueling an intriguing opportunity. We have Halima Cross here and Federica in London, and they're pretty smart people when it comes to, the oil business. So oil prices surged to a 6-month high in early April. All right. So it was underpinned by both OPEC production cuts and demand being stronger than the market expected, thanks to resilient economies. And so you add the ongoing conflict in the Middle East and things get interesting here. So the fundamentals of the oil market are strong, and the OPEC oil inventories below their 5-year highs or 5-year average is good too. So look, if you're going forward, the White House has reimposed sanctions on Venezuelan oil. Biden administration hates everything oil. So, and Halima Croft, our expert on the Middle East and commodity strategy, expects the sanctions to have limited impact, but she believes the U.S. will grant direct licenses on a case-by-case basis to international companies that do business in Venezuela. So, and, Saudi Arabia may gradually return some of its cuts to the market in the summer, when they see the secure benefits of higher prices, and they'll throw some volume there. But look, I think the geopolitical risk is a clear and present danger right now, and it's been heating up since last autumn, and it's getting even more heated up now, so we'll see what happens. But the other thing I think that's important, and a couple years ago, I talked about oil stocks, and I pounded the table on oil stocks. It was funny, some of my clients didn't buy it, but capital discipline has been very important in energy stocks. Global energy shares are up, and it's been, in recent years, they've been forced with the threat of energy transition, and oil companies have become more circumstanced in allocating, what's the best way to put it? Well, their capital expenditure programs. So what they've been doing is holding back. Cash is king. So going forward, I think you're going to see more of that, and it'll get really interesting. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about a little bit about fixed income, and a lot of people don't understand it. And look, there's taxable what they call a taxable equivalent yields, and there's several areas that you got to know. Look, if you buy a treasury, it's exempt from state tax. If you buy an agency, it's exempt from state tax. CDs are fully taxable, so you want to keep those in your IRAs, right? In-state municipals are often exempt from both federal and state tax. In the state of Ohio, that's definitely the case. Out-of-state municipals are exempt from government taxes, but not Ohio taxes. Corporates are fully taxable, and preferreds, some issues may have lower capital gains tax rate, not all of them. So what you got to know about in fixed income is what the taxable equivalent is. So you get the taxable equivalent equals the tax-free bond divided by 1 minus the tax rate. Okay, so let's give you an example. Suppose we have an Ohio-based bond, and you don't pay federal or state taxes on those. So if we got a 4% bond, we have a taxable equivalent of about 8.28%. So if the taxable bond has a pre-tax yield higher than 8.2%, the investor would be better off with the fully taxable bond, okay? If not, they'd be better with the municipal. Now, the other thing is, if you put a fully taxable bond in an IRA, there are no taxes until you take it out, right? So fixed income can be a very important part of your portfolio. Now, the municipal bond area, look, we'll do a complete review for you if you have $1 million in bonds or not, or over. And over time, a lot of people get those because municipal bonds are a long-term investment. And you use weakness in the bond prices and spikes in yield to buy those. That's important, okay? So, look, I think there's a couple things that you got to know about fixed income. Number one, we look at our approach here at RBC is to simply look at both the income, which is important, but also the chance for capital gains. So if we can buy something that has a potential growth through price appreciation, we're going to buy that also. And it's these results, you know, we see from what we call a balanced process that's important. So keep that in mind. And I think the other thing you got to understand, if you're buying fixed income, you've got to know what a credit spread is within fixed income. And credit spreads are the excess yield versus a comparable maturity of another debt instrument. Usually it's the treasury, okay? So it's the spread over treasury that people are looking for. And, normally, for some reason, they move with the equity market. So if the equity market's up and going up higher, the credit spreads tighten. And then when the equity market goes down, spreads loosen, okay? So these spreads, they're not set in stone, so they move up and down. So you got to use your head, and that's where we come in. We tend to know the credit spreads pretty well and where to go. I've also noticed that CDs, some of the 10-year and 5-year CDs, 5-year CDs are starting to yield like in the 5.3, 5.4% area. And I think that's a really good idea because if the Fed is going to lower rates, those bonds will hold up and look really, really good a year from now. So just keep that in the back of your head. Hey, let's take a break, and we'll be right back. This is the Smart Investor Show. Stay tuned.
So good to be back in studio with our friend Bill Gardner from Empire Window Company. Now that the spring and the summer is on its way, you don't want to lose all of your cold air. Get those energy-efficient windows from Empire Window Company. Bill, are you giving away free windows?
Yes, we're giving away free windows.
What?
We actually have buy two, get two at this time. There's no limit. You're going to get a great quality window, an energy-efficient window, professional install from installers that do this every day.
When it comes time to flip that air conditioning on, you want to make sure that you are energy efficient.
Windows can help year-round. They help with heating, cooling, sound, fading. So any time of year is a great time to get them. Now is a perfect time to get them. I mean, you have the nice weather around the corner. You want to keep the air in, but you also want a window that operates if you want to open them up for a nice breeze.
And Bill, in addition to buying two and getting two free, you're offering great financing options too, aren't you?
Right now, we're offering no interest, no payments for 24 months. So free windows and free money.
That's a pretty good deal. Free windows and free money. And all you've got to do to claim all of that is call that phone number, 855-76-EMPIRE. And why do people call Empire Window Company, Bill?
Because they deserve a fair price.
They sure do.
Jazz sensation Terrence Blanchard is coming to Cleveland, joined by the E Collective and the Turtle Island Quartet. A celebration of Wayne Shorter, presented in partnership with the Tri-C Jazz Fest, as part of the 2024 Mandel Opera and Humanities Festival. Terrence Blanchard, May 21st at Severance Music Center. Tickets at clevelandorchestra.com.
At RBC Wealth Management, we are proud of our reputation for putting clients' interests first. Our steadfast commitment to helping clients achieve their financial goals includes giving back to the communities we serve. Through supporting youth education, human services, and the arts, we hope to make tomorrow better for everyone. Call Tim Hayes at 216-774-8906. RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the chair. It's just another day.
I saw Paul at the gun, or what's it called now, the Progressive Fieldhouse. And he was fantastic. Very good. Hey, the one thing I also wanted to mention about credit spreads, which I didn't have time for because we took a break, is that normally widening credit spreads tend to precede an economic slowdown. So that's something that a lot of people watch and should watch. All right. So I had this conversation with this young gentleman going to Akron U and said, you should be in passive management 100% of the time. And if that was true, there'd be no Warren Buffett. There'd be no Marshfield. Okay, by the way, Marshfield will be in town June 6th and 7th. They do take a $250,000 investment. I would love to send you their brochure because they have beaten the market handily by almost 2 percentage points. So now, look, I think if you look active versus passive, active funds, they try to outperform a certain benchmark. Passive funds just track the specific commodity or basket of assets, whatever. The active funds select assets that offer promising investment opportunities. Passive funds do nothing. They just replicate the performance. Pros of an active fund are potential to capture mispricing opportunities and beat the market. Passive funds are a convenient and low-cost way of gaining exposure to certain assets, et cetera. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to think, okay? And then the cons are fees are typically higher for an active fund, and there's no guarantee of outperformance, obviously, and there's no opportunity to outperform the market in the case of a passive fund. Now, people said, well, why don't I put all my money in a passive fund? Well, let's say you did that in 1998. You had had two 50% corrections in the bear market that that went through from 2000 to 2016. Two 50% declines. Now, if your nerves are that good, or you don't mind losing your mind watching 50% of your net worth go away, that's fine. Okay. So I think there's, you can use both, I guess. But look, I went on the show and I said cash would outperform the stock market in the middle of 2007. And I said that right until 2009 and March, I think it was March 3rd or 7th. I can't remember which the date was. And I said, now we're at a generational low. Okay. During that period of time, Marshfield had its only year where it was down more than 2%. They were down 15%. And the next year, they're up 29. Okay. In the meantime, during the first 50% decline, Marshfield was up 14% the first year, 8% the second year, and up down 1.6% the third year. During the Great Recession, they were up two of the 3 years. So that's how you outperform. You outperform in the down years. That's why I like them. And if you'd like to see the information on Marshfield, I'd be glad to send it to you. But so a lot of people say, hey, the S&P 500 is the way to go. I'm sorry, I disagree. And I disagree simply because of the fact that, you know, Warren Buffett's been beating the market. Marshfield's been beating the market. You know, in 2022, a lot of my accounts were flat, down 18%. Marshfield was up 6.25%, by the way, after fees. So, you know, and a down 18% S&P 500 and a NASDAQ was down 27%. So that is where you make your money, okay? It's down markets. If you protect your assets, that's what you want to do. So I've been talking about gold mining and the trends. And look, mining equities and mining prices continue to rally, just but the mining equities are rallying less than the actual equities. So the only thing I would say is the if you look at the copper stocks are ahead of copper. I don't know what that means, but look, usually gold stocks have leverage. But you can't tell. I mean, if you look at the last 15 years, you know, and you look at the gold price per ounce, and now we're breaking out of that, versus the VanEck Gold Miners ETF, you know, it's underperformed by quite a bit. Okay? You know, I mean, if you look at GLD, and I'm looking at GLD as the price of gold, that's the New York Stock Exchange version of gold, simply because it has gold behind it, and it matches gold. And we had this huge cup and handle formation, I think, you know, just my limited technical skills. And gold miners were hitting new lows just a month ago, 2 months ago. So I think it might be a good time, you know, to take a look at, you know, we have a brand new list of gold mining stocks. And added two last week. I bought some of, just for a couple people who didn't own any gold. I bought that for them. So I think that's kind of interesting. You know, and look, I was talking about ADRs last month, and I will continue to talk about ADRs. But I'm going to, that was my second question. I'm going to take that in the third part of the show. But look, a lot of the artificial intelligence and the, you know, the augmented reality, and, you know, they've been using that with gaming stocks, gaming companies for some time now. Or virtual reality, blended reality, whatever you want to call it. It's a very powerful tool, all right? You know, there's some companies out there that are using it to train their people, and it's becoming big. So that's part of AI. And remember, a lot of these AI companies have strong revenue trends. They're making more investments in AI. It can monetize it. That's really important. Now, the key is the GPU, which is the brain of AI, the chips are hard to get and they run hot. Okay, we're going to talk about that in a second. So they're harder to get right now, but a lot of companies are getting involved. Intel says they have a chip now. AMD has a chip. So it's not going to be just NVIDIA, although I think NVIDIA may lead the way. So there's some other names out there that I think you got to pay attention to. But look, I think they've backed off a little bit. Growth stocks have backed off a little bit. You know, I know one company that's kind of the next AI chip on the company, I think, and I bought some of it and backed off a little bit. I'm going to buy some more. All right. But the chip industry, some of the great names have backed off. Might be a good time to pay attention. The data centers, some of them are hitting new highs. Some of them backed off. Maybe it's time, you know, and look, data centers are more than just, you know, the liquid cooling. There's all the parts that go with it. So there's some industrial companies that are involved in a big, big way. All right. So now is the time to take a look at those reports that I sent out to a few people here and there. Now is the time when they backed off a little bit. Maybe you can enter them. Okay. So AI is not going away, is what I'm trying to tell you in so many words. It's just not. It's here to stay. All right. And I know, you know, JP Morgan's all in with AI. I know RBC is very interested in, you know, we've gone to AI and talked about it quite a bit. So I think it's important that, you start to look at these stocks, because I think they're going to be stocks that continue to grow. People, the one thing about the internet is that a lot of people bought internet stocks that had no earnings and had and were trading at 50, 60 times revenue. Right? That's a disaster waiting to happen. These companies have revenue and have earnings. Isn't that amazing? That were the ones in our reports, by the way. So I think these are going to be here to stay for a while. Okay, so we're not talking La La Land here like we were back in 2000. This is different. All right. Now it may get to La La Land sometime. I think that's the future. But as of now, what I'm seeing is you have to have earnings. You have to have revenue increases. All right. Meta missed by a very short amount and got whacked. I think they guided the revenue number down a little bit. So that's going to happen. But look, I think you've got to remember that a lot of these names are here to stay. Okay. They're here to stay. So a lot of these names had really good quarters and they still sold them off, which is really kind of unusual, but that happens. It's the mood of the market, if it's like kids at Christmas, right? They're standing on the stairs and they're waiting to go downstairs and the kid wants a bike and he gets a BB gun, or he wants a BB gun and gets a bike. He's not as happy. He's sad the rest of the day. Okay. Hey, let's take a break. This is Smart Investor Show. I'm Tim Hayes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Let's face it. There's a reason Cleveland homes have a stormwater drain line.
Basement flooding can be a real issue thanks to Lake Erie and spring showers.
Now, we hope it's not a problem for your home, but if it is, you know what we're talking about.
And you probably have a sump pump installed, if not more.
What we'd love to do for you is inspect your sump pump for free, because we don't want you to discover problems after things get wet. We'll ensure your pump powers up, turns on, pumps water, is sized properly, and hasn't collected debris in the basin or sump. A full inspection at no cost to you.
And if any problems do turn up,
you'll have just saved yourself some real spring shower headaches.
And our straight-talking, hard-working, do-it-right plumbers will show you the issue
and explain all your options for a fix. Because no Cleveland homeowner should get surprised by basement flooding.
So call for a free sump pump inspection and
consider it done at WyattWorks.com.
Lake Erie. Dozens of beaches dot the shoreline. And thanks to Adopt-A-Beach cleanup volunteers, more of these precious spots are healthier, safer, and beautiful. Alliance for the Great Lakes wants you to join this movement with thousands of others that get out each year and make a real difference. About 85% of beach litter is plastic, but with your help, we're cleaning it up. It's fun, easy, and means so much. Go to greatlakes.org/adopt and join us on the beach.
When rolling over your 401k, it's easy to get lost. Look to the experienced, knowledgeable financial advisors from RBC Wealth Management to guide you through the whole 401k rollover process. It's all part of designing a plan that's tailored to your unique investment needs. Call Tim Hayes at 216-774-8906. RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC. Member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
Paul McCartney, and the Beatles, by the way. Anyway, I was thinking, and we had kind of an interesting day Thursday. We were down 600 points at one time, a little bit over that, and we finished up, but up from there to be down like 320, 330, and so we had a downtrend. We broke it. I think that's kind of interesting, but we're getting to a point where dividend stocks are making a lot more sense. I had the dividend growth portfolio. You give us money, we'll just run it for you for a small fee, and it didn't hardly move. Okay, so with the Fed trying to figure out what their policy is. The inflation rate picked up a little bit. What it does is it makes the valuation of these dividend growth stocks look a lot more compelling over the long term. And look, the question is, you buy dividend stocks or you buy fixed income yields. And I remember, you know, fixed income, especially CDs and bonds, you know, tend to be taxed at your regular income. Okay. Dividends still get 18%. Now, there are some preferreds that get the 15%. I'm sorry. There are some preferreds that get that too. So I just think the valuation is very, very compelling right at this point. You know, you're looking at almost two standard deviations below their average, you know, where they've been before. So now during the Obama administration, they were higher because there wasn't much of growth. Okay. So when growth tends to sell off, dividend stocks do better, right? Now we have some growth, and so dividend stocks have sold off, and it makes it a really interesting time to buy. So the dividend growth portfolio is for people, no matter what age you are. You know, if you're 40 and you put these away and you have dividend reinvestment, and then you take dividend reinvestment off when you're 60, you're probably going to have a 6, 7% yield, maybe 8% yield on these particular dividend growth portfolio stocks. Because they, you know, they don't stay in the list if they don't add 6 to 8% a year. Okay, so 6 to 8% a year, plus you get a little bit of capital gain going with them because you can't fake a dividend. All right, these are the best companies as far as their balance sheets are. These are the best. All right, so the key is slow growth that adds up over time, and then you take out your dividend, you know, reinvestment. And suddenly you've got income big coming in every month or every quarter, whatever it may be. Now, the prime income list is good for people who need income right now. All right. It's yielding about 4.25%. So, by the way, that could go up. It has gone up in the past. But 4.25% is a pretty nice sum. All right. With a lower tax rate than you'd get at a CD. Okay. So, a lot of these are trading at, you know, 10 times earnings, 8 times earnings, so there's not as much risk in them. But if you look at the spread over the corporate yields, the investment grade spread and the high yield spread is at a point where, you know, bonds have reversed course here and moved lower at the end of the last couple of months. So this could continue a little bit, you know, but if you look at the importance of dividend growth, if you put, you know, $100 into a dividend portfolio back in 1990, it would now be worth about $4,500. If you just track the S&P 500 with no dividends, which those do, you know, you'd be looking at about $1,300. Okay, so dividends are important. Remember, 40% of the return of the S&P 500 from 1945 on is dividend oriented. Okay, so, but you know, I mean, if you got rental property, dividend growth portfolio is perfect for you. You know, and you don't have to worry about do you have a bad tenant? there's some volatility there. You don't see the volatility in your rental property, but believe me, the prices change in and out pretty regularly. But they do appreciate ever so gradually, right? And that you don't have to worry about are all the units rented, right? So it's an interesting scenario, I think, and it gives us, you know, some things to think about. So, you know, we've got this intermediate pullback, and I just, you know, a little bit of technical stuff here. You know, if we looked at Rob Schleimer's work on a weekly basis, we're still a little bit overbought. His quadrant balance indicator is still a little bit overbought. But on a daily basis, it's oversold. So I know people were asking me about the 10-year yield. I didn't think it'd get over 450. I said that on the show. I was wrong. You got to be wrong occasionally. But the relative strength has been up there, and it's over 70 now. And usually when relative strength gets over RSI, I'm talking about, gets over 70, it'll pull back sometime in the near future. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. But you know, I have talked about semiconductors, and I think it's a, you know, semiconductors are kind of correcting right now. And what a great idea to be buying somewhere along here, you know. And what you do is, let's say you want to buy, you know, 100 shares of a $200 or $150 stock, buy a little bit, buy 25 shares, it pulls back a little bit, buy 25 more, pulls back a little bit more, buy 25. And then when it turns up, buy another 25. You've got your 100 and it's starting to turn up. It's a good way of doing things. I also think, look, energy was kind of a laggard in the first quarter, and it get kind of a, you know, I looked at the chart. Now, I'm not a chartist or whatever, but a lot of people talking about it bottoming, and with what's going on in the Middle East, that could be, you know, an interesting scenario going forward, okay? It would be probably very beneficial to have a little bit of energy. And the question is, do you buy, you know, what do you buy in the energy area? And I would just scatter it a little bit with some of the real high quality names, with a little bit of the, you know, the drillers, and also, you know, the alternative energy groups. It's amazing how much money's come out of those portfolios. Nothing's really been said bad about them. It's just they took $8 billion out of the ESG funds, and I think it's an anti-woke type thing, you know. So we'll see what goes on. But the other thing I think is important is I'm looking at the European stocks, and you know, I've always said Mr. Copper, you know, is a good look at the economy. But what Mr. Copper usually breaks out, it's the emerging markets that usually do better. So you got to watch that too. But you know, I think it's, you know, you don't have to be there yet, because we don't have the turn up in relative performance versus the S&P 500. Although, and Dorsey writes stuff, you know, their X's and O's, China did turn into a column of X's versus the S&P 500. Now, it's still way down, and the uptrend line is a ways away, or the downtrend line is a ways away. But if the inflationary pressures are fading in Europe, if, you know, we're not sure about that yet, it could be a time of transition. It could be a very good opportunity, because a lot of the European stocks are trading really cheap. And some of the, you know, the Chinese stocks, et cetera, are really, really cheap. All right. So I just think it's time you want to be looking at some of these names. And, you know, like I said, just keep them on your radar. I've been watching, I got the whole list, and I've been watching them on the radar. So it's kind of interesting. Look, I think what people don't understand is that this, you know, the supply chain thing that disrupted the pandemic, it's still how, you know, I still don't think we realize how interconnected global supply chains are, you know? And so as that, we step away from the pandemic more and more, I think there's going to be a big, big opportunity going forward, okay? But there are still some supply chain problems out there. And, you know, that's something that you have to pay pretty close attention to. So, one of the other things I want to talk about is I talked to some people that I put the family inventory workbook into their hands. And they did it. They went crazy. Most detailed report I've ever seen. And Joy and Mark, it was the best I've ever seen anybody do. And it's amazing. We're going to make copies of it. You know, we're going to give a copy to their lawyer. We're going to give a copy to their accountant, and we'll give a copy to each one of the kids, so they know exactly where everything is. And what a great thing that would be for most of your, you know, most of you out there. Make it easy on your kids to know where everything is. I do have a new report out on global mining best ideas for 2024, for the second quarter of 2024. And we added a couple names. One's a a real small cap one. And it's kind of an interesting Vegas money stock. And the other is a good quality mid cap in the mining area. But we have it's a good list, and we have a really good analyst, by the way. Josh is considered one of the better guys out there. So he goes over where he thinks the best ideas are, and you know, performance, success, et cetera. And I think it's you know, some really good information. So if you'd like that, you know, you go to WHK's webpage, go to local podcast, down to Smart Investor Show. You can two clicks get you to my webpage. There's all sorts of contact me and email me's if you'd like the family inventory workbook or our wealth plan questionnaire. You know, just hit there and just say, Tim, hey, get it to me. If you'd like to sit down and talk about your portfolio, let me know too. But I do think that, you know, there's a big discrepancy between gold and gold stocks. They've been thrown away, and that may be changing soon. Although I think gold may pull back a little bit further here. So I don't, you know, I didn't say go buy gold. I'm not that smart. But I think the gold stocks could get really interesting. So the best gold idea is, you know, 5% of your portfolio in gold might be it's always been a prudent thing to do, and keep that in mind. So I think that a lot of people don't have gold. You know, it's been a place not to hide. But in the meantime, let's take a break. This is Smart Investor Show. I'm Tim Hayes. Stay tuned.
Attention, WHK listeners. Cleveland Right to Life's weekly broadcast has a new time. Make sure to tune in Saturdays at 8 a.m. to stay informed about the ongoing fight to protect all innocent life. For more information about the organization, visit clevelandrighttolife.org.
This is Dennis Prager, and now a truly exciting new benefit. My monthly online video get-together for PragerTopia Plus members only. For an hour each month, get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. I'll be answering your questions. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at PragerTopia.com. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to PragerTopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
When it comes to managing your retirement, it's easy to get lost. Look to RBC Wealth Management to guide you. Our experienced, knowledgeable financial advisors will build your investment strategy by designing a plan that's tailored to your unique financial needs. Call Tim Hayes at 216-774-8906. RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC. Member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC. Visit rbcwealthmanagement.com.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
More Beatles. Lenny, he's making me happy today. So anyway, like I said, I think it's an important time to start to take a look at what's correcting, okay, and where we can position it. And I think what you're seeing is the value stocks are going ahead. Okay, the financials, the industrials, they're holding. But it's the technology stocks and the stuff, you know, that people have been buying for some time now, they're getting pounded. Now, there was a couple technology stocks that did really well Friday. I have been buying those fairly regularly for people. You know, I thought there was two brilliant quarters, and one of those companies added a dividend, which was very, very positive. So I own a lot of it. And I just think that, you know, look, on a weekly basis, we're still overbought. So I don't think we've hit the low. We're probably going to have some volatility going into the second quarter and stay in there for a while. Remember what I talked about when we talked about the election. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was, you know, during the election, we talked, you know, the first part of the year is good. flat to up, and then May and June are down. And by the way, that May and June being down has been the same case now for, I think, the last 22 presidential elections. All right, so it's kind of an important precedent. Now, they're not down a lot. They just scare people. All right, and then, like I said, going into October, what we have is a scenario where usually if you get the incumbent stays in if the market is up during October, okay? But, I mean, if you look at people say, oh, you know, Republican versus Democrat, and well, I kind of disagree with that. I just think there are good years for everybody, all right? The Democrats had some years, you know, where they look really bad, and the Republicans have some years where they look really bad. But generally, the upslope in America is because we're allowed to be innovative. You know, those guys sitting behind the desk that you say CEOs, oh, they're overpaid, all they do is worry. I mean, how would you like to be the CEO of a company and know that you're missing your earnings and you had to go on CNBC? Not a fun job, okay? People say, oh, you know, he makes so much money. He makes so much money because he's taking risks, okay? So the key here is that people who are in that position want the company stock to do better. They're trying to innovate to do better. And so we get it going higher. But look, during the presidential season, from basically from May to I think it's, you know, the middle of June, you kind of have usually a down market. And then it starts to pick up and it gets, you know, in September, it's usually rallied a little bit and then pulls back. And then, like I said, if October's down, the incumbent loses. If October's up, the incumbent wins. And we usually end up about 7.5-8% up for the year. So, and you could say this, I mean, look, the only thing I saw with, you know, like Trump versus Biden, you know, we had a down move, obviously, because of the pandemic, and that we ended up 16% higher. Clinton versus Trump, we ended up 9.5% higher. So, you know, so usually the only year I remember in elections going back pretty far was the Bush versus Gore year, and that was we were down 10% because we had the hanging chads, and I think that was more because the market does not like uncertainty than anything else. Okay. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but, there were bigger issues, by the way, than the Bush versus Gore recount. There was the tech bubble. There was the 9/11 tax. There was, you know, the peak of the tech bubble. Then there was a low in September of 2002, 9/11 occurred. That didn't help. So, you know, that was the only one that I could see going back, you know, 30 or 40 years that really was a problem. So keep that in mind. In the meantime, we are a little bit overbought on a weekly basis. On a daily basis, we're oversold. So we should probably have a nice rally. I don't think it'll be, you know, the bottom. Okay. I think, you'll bounce around a little bit. So we'll see what happens going forward. Now, the Dow Jones is a little bit closer to oversold than it was, but I think what's important, though, is that the bullish sentiment, as Lori Calvacina said, has pulled back. I think it's now at 35, and the bears are up to 35, so they're dead equal. And so we're actually at a negative number for the bull versus bear spread. Not much of a negative number, but it is a negative number. So and look, the small caps still, I mean, both Tom Lee and Lori Calvacina are talking very positive about those. And they're two smart people, by the way. So we'll see that, you know, the dailies are very, very oversold there. So we'll see what happens. But I think you really got to look at that and the ADR list or the foreign stocks is you got to look at the relative performance versus the S&P 500. If it ticks up and they start to get more equal, that'll be the time to pay very close attention going forward. And I think in the meantime, you know, look, I just think it's a time where you want to look at the names that we've been talking about for the last couple of years. You know, we've been talking about the big data centers, the chips, the AI, let them come back to you. Buy a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. And then if the small cap situation, which really went crazy at the end of last year, if that turns around again, all right, things could get really, really interesting because then we'd spread the market out a little bit. Somebody asked me, I think it was Saul. I talked to him on the telephone this week. He asked me, Tim, what's the biggest risk to the market? And I said, it's not. It's too concentrated. All right. People are just shoving money into S&P 500 things, and I think they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, by the way, I'm not the only guy that said that. There was two very important gentlemen in the hedge fund industry that said that they thought that that the S&P passive investors were being stupid about things. So they didn't say exactly use the word stupid. They said, I think they use something like that, though. All right. So what would I do now? Look at the dividend growth list, the prime income list. I'd start to look at the ADR list, and I'd definitely look at the gold list. I think gold, you know, gold, the actual commodity, has broken out of a huge consolidation, and the gold stocks have not participated. Believe me, they have unbelievable leverage to the price of gold, so keep that in mind. So that's what I'd be doing. In the meantime, a wealth plan or a family inventory workbook would be a good idea. Get organized. It's time to get organized. Get your financials organized. And go to my webpage and set up an appointment. We'll sit down and talk. In the meantime, have a great weekend. And it's looks like it's supposed to rain a little bit, but it's supposed to be up in the 80s tomorrow. This is Tim Hayes with the Smart Investor Show. Remember to buy low and sell high.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Investor Hour. To reach Tim during the week, call him toll-free, 888-223-7742. That's 888-223-7742. Or visit his website, rbcwmfa.com/Tim Hayes. That's all one word in the address bar, rbcwfma.com/Tim Hayes. Please join us again next Saturday for the Smart Investor Hour to hear more smart investing from Tim Hayes of RBC Wealth Management.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.